Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio in real time via ZipWhip landline texting at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubert.
We're going to talk transportation this morning. City Councilman Matt Kelly is along with us. And Matt, I'll let you introduce Paul because you've brought a guest with you this morning.
I think it was appropriate to actually bring the resident regional expert on transportation, Paul Agnello, who's our executive director, I guess is the title, or director of FAMPO. A longtime employee with VDOT also for a number of years. And I'll let Paul kind of give you his bit of his resume.
I'm glad to be here, Ted and Matt.
Good to have you here, Paul.
I've worked for VDOT for about 12 years prior to joining FAMPO about 2 years ago.
The Fredericksburg Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, it's especially when Matt's here, we talk FAMPO a lot. What is it?
Basically, it's a organization which was created by the federal government back in the early 90s. We do a lot of work that basically traditionally VDOT would do in the transportation planning realm. We're basically helping plan the highways, transit facilities, and bike and ped facilities in the Fredericksburg region.
Was FAMPO was it created? Was it the federal government or the state who said that this area needed this?
There's a federal requirement that areas with 50,000 population or more basically have an organization like this.
Okay.
Fredericksburg went over kind of that threshold in the 1990 census. So FAMPO is about 25 years old. The actual boundaries are basically approved by the region's localities and the governor of Virginia.
I should have worn it because you gave me a hat years ago, Matt, a FAMPO hat that I still have and wear.
We have FAMPO. I don't know if we have any more laying around.
But it's Fredericksburg, Spotsylvania, Stafford is.
Yes.
So it's not the planning district.
It's not the planning district. No. I'll say Caroline and King George. They attend FAMPO meetings, but they're not formally part of FAMPO today.
Matt, I didn't realize that FAMPO had been around that long.
Oh, it has. It predates me and my time on here.
Okay.
So, and again, it's a federally mandated, and that. Paul hits the technical stuff. I hit the political stuff. It is something that a lot of states, and I think VDOT on occasions, is not happy about having to deal with localities on some of this. As you know from our past discussions, there's been a little bit of headbanging between the MPOs and VDOT over the years and now. Because another aspect of this is a lot of the projects – because of the federal legislation, have to be on our approved list for things to move forward.
And FAMPO meetings, are they monthly?
They're generally monthly. We meet the third Monday of most months. We're meeting this month on the 21st, and they meet at 7:15 p.m. at the GWRC offices at 406 Princess Anne Street in Fredericksburg.
Just under the train tracks is the are the offices that you have, and so you're dealing with all kinds of transportation issues.
Yes, highway, bike, ped, rail, transit. We cover it all.
What FAMPO does, you're getting input, and then the representatives from the localities are voting on the various issues.
Yes. And I'll say a lot of times we give that input to the state.
Okay.
And I understand the policy board for FAMPO is each jurisdiction has three votes, and then PRTC, Potomac Rappahannock Transportation Commission, can't follow on the acronyms all the time, has a vote. VDOT has a vote.
And that's it.
That's it. And then we have a CTAG, which is a citizens advisory group that also sits at the table but does not have a vote. We always invite our CTB rep, Hap Connors, to attend the meetings also.
I guess one of the big issues that we're going to get into this morning is something that you talked a month or so ago to City Council about, Matt. It was the first time I had heard it, and it dealt with I-95 and funding I-95, and it's a pretty big issue.
Well, yes, it is a very big issue for us, and let me premise this with two general points. One, I-95. It's more involved than just I-95, but I-95 has turned into the poster child of what the concerns are for transportation. Obviously, it goes into transit as well as regional roads, local roads, everything. But it is kind of the poster child for it. And it really comes down to the issue of the smart scale matrix and how the state is now funding projects. And on the good side, and I do want to put in one good point about this, when we went from the traditional funding system for projects to smart scale, the one thing that smart scale does is it says, if we decide to fund a project, we are going to fund it to completion. It is going to be a completed project. And I've got to say that's a big step forward in that regard. You know, the issue is how they rate the projects. And the other aspect of this, and smart scale gets a lot of hits from us, is, and I will agree with my discussions with VDOT on this, when you have $1 billion to break up between $9 billion of applications is in the last round, there's a funding problem here that, frankly, VDOT cannot deal with. You know, that's a political issue with both Richmond and Washington. But the point is, the way the metric system is set up to rate the projects and which projects get funded is pretty much has some hurdles for us that makes the I-95 northbound, we did get the southbound funded, and there's an interesting tie-in between the two, that the northbound project under the current dynamic is not going to get funded unless we find a lot of money to throw towards it. So the question we've got to start talking about is, what are the options? The options are to change the matrix, which we can talk about, and Paul can give you a lot more details on where that currently is at. You know, we can find the funding, which is highly unlikely, and or will take quite a few years. We're going into the Transportation Authority discussion. Or we just come to the conclusion that, you know what, these projects are too big, they're not going to get funded, therefore let's refocus our efforts on other things and just basically say the interstate system should be the responsibility of the state and federal government. We need to get out of the interstate business altogether. So that's pretty much the situation in a nutshell.
Why would the southbound be funded and the northbound not?
That's a great question. Basically, it was due to the project being so large, the state recommended that it be split up into two. And the southbound had a little bit more traffic than the northbound, so that kind of was deemed a little bit higher priority a few years ago.
And here's the fundamental problem with that project. As Paul just mentioned, when VDOT looked at it initially, it's too big. You have to break it up in parts. When you start breaking up in parts, two things happen. One of the things that VDOT is looking at in the matrix system is the improvements. If we do everything, we can really improve 95, but the state doesn't have the money. As you break it into smaller parts, those improvements get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and are graded accordingly. So VDOT's not looking at everything in its totality and saying, here's phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four. They're looking at project one, two, three, and four. So when you break it up that much, you're basically lowering the score. That's one. Two, what's interesting is when the surprise came down after commitments, I wouldn't say commitments, but the Secretary of Transportation and the head of VDOT going, oh, don't worry about it, northbound, that's easy. That's going to get funded in numerous conversations. And when it didn't, it's kind of like, what happened?
Yeah.
And one of the parts of the answer was, well, you know, when they re-looked at it, they looked at what the improvements of the southbound system was going to do, and that lowered the northbound's impact, which affected its score. So we get one improvement, which immediately cascades and starts negatively impacting all the other improvements. And that's one of the biggest problems about this. We're not going to be able, because of these, the way it's stacked up, and again, VDOT asked us to break it up, we're basically hanging ourselves when we do that. I don't know if Paul wants to add anything to.
Well, I'll say that it's just very challenging basically getting these large projects funded, and basically the way that the smart scale kind of process currently works, there's a huge advantage with large projects if you're able to leverage significant funding. And also that Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads have the ability to do that because they have regional transportation authorities. Our region and the rest of the state do not have that ability. The problem we have is we have Northern Virginia or Hampton Roads level traffic problems, but we do not have the yeah. financial resources to bring to bear to basically get the improvements that are needed to I-95.
Paul, has I-95 always been, because I would have thought before I had gotten to know Matt and before we've had some of these conversations, would have years ago thought that the interstate was the was something that the federal government would oversee. Has state and local governments always overseen some of the improvements on the interstate?
Well, I'll say with the interstate system, basically, under the Eisenhower administration, when basically the interstate system was created, the federal government was more involved. I'll say basically in recent years that they've kind of delegated a lot of the responsibilities okay. really to states and localities. And most of the funding now for transportation is coming from kind of the state and local level. The federal basically level funding is steadily kind of decreased as a percentage over the years. And the federal gas tax has not increased since 1993. I believe in Virginia basically the amount of federal funding that VDOT receives is roughly maybe around 1/6 of the total funding.
Okay.
It's no more than that.
We're talking transportation this morning. Paul Agnello here, the FAMPO Administrator, City Councilman Matt Kelly here. We'll be back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubert.
We're talking transportation this morning. City Councilman Matt Kelly here. Paul Agnello, the FAMPO Administrator, is here. And now we're starting, we're discussing I-95. And Matt, you mentioned in talking about 95 in this area, deciding that instead of putting our money and our efforts into trying to get it, it's not going to happen. What then happens to 95? What happens to the 95 northbound improvements that need to be made? Is that something that the state will have to?
Well, there's one other aspect to this, and getting back to a little bit of what Paul said earlier about scaling, you know, bringing the projects, splitting the projects up. Another aspect of this, and this is where politics enters into a little bit of this, is, you know, frankly, even to make southbound CD lanes, collector distributor lanes work, or the local lanes work, we really needed that, the Greenway, to kind of separate commercial traffic from residential traffic on Route 3. Because basically, if you're going to take local traffic and put it onto a failing road, you still eventually have a problem that you've got to deal with. But, you know, politics kills that. Going back to VDOT, even with the 95 project northbound, VDOT has come to us on occasion and said, well, you know, the price tag is still too high. You need to cut this out. You need to cut this out. You need to remodify this. And I know Paul needs to comment on this a little bit more with the specifics. And then again, what you're doing is you're basically, after now we've split the project, so their impacts are less. And when you come back in and you're trying to fit it into a prearranged budget, now you can take a project and basically make it, in a sense, worthless. Its impacts will be so diminished, mm-hmm. why make the investment? And I think, you know, this whole cost aspect of this is also coming into play. So I think we could probably do better. Also, my understanding is smart scale changes will, fewer projects will come be able to be submitted. And maybe we need to really start focusing in on the Route 3, Route 17s, Route 1s,
yeah.
and, you know, those major regional corridors, and just basically say to the state and feds, your highway system, your problem, you take care of it. Because unless they recognize, which they still don't, that Interstate 95 is an artery for the entire East Coast, let alone the Commonwealth of Virginia, yet when they rate it under smart scale, it's only rated based on its local impacts, which, again, is, in a word, insane. So if that's the rules of the game, you know, if that's the rules of the game and you're going into a game yeah. that you know you're going to lose, why bother?
I mean, because, and I guess, Paul, you're dealing with, like, you're dealing with only so much money.
Yeah, I'll say that's one of the big challenges. There's just not enough funding. We talked a little bit about the federal funding levels being inadequate, and that doesn't seem to be getting better anytime soon. I'll say right now, basically, the federal government, in terms of the money they take in from the federal gas tax and what they pay out to states and localities, they're only taking in about 2/3 of what they need. So they're operating at a deficit, and there doesn't seem to be any appetite in Congress to raise the gas tax or raise any other kind of federal revenue for transportation. State level, our state gas tax, although it was raised in 2013, is still not that high when you compare us to other states. Mm-hmm. We're basically ranked number 40 nationwide. And in terms of just the revenue per capita from the state gas tax, we're number 43. So when you compare us to basically other neighboring states, Maryland, West Virginia, North Carolina, we're all a lot lower than that. And that's why when you travel up and down the East Coast, Virginia has one of the lowest gas prices. And what I would say is you basically get what you pay for. Everyone wants better transportation, but if you're not willing to pay for it, you can't get it.
Can I interject? Because this is the Achilles heel of the discussion from a political aspect of this, which is we go to the gas tax is low, you know, and it comes down to increase taxes, which a lot of our colleagues in the General Assembly immediately latch on to. They, instead of going ahead and saying, yes, we've got a problem, how are we going to deal with it? They go, oh, you're just talking about raising taxes, and therefore the conversation ends there.
Yeah.
Taxes is a potential issue, and I don't want to take that off the table. But there's also something else that needs to be discussed here, which is state and feds, transportation is their responsibility for the most part when it comes to the major arteries, not localities. So guys in Richmond and Washington, look at your priorities, reprioritize the funding you're using now to meet those priorities. Public safety is another one and things of that nature. Then you can go off and play your games for all the other pet projects. Mm-hmm. But take care of transportation and the core education, those things first. That's part of this discussion. And they don't want to hear, nobody wants to hear that portion of the discussion. And again, it's so easy for a lot of people to divert the conversation immediately off to the issue of, oh, it's a tax, therefore we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
The other aspect of it is, and I've had this conversation with members of the General Assembly, is the process in place to get a project funded and all the hoops you got to jump through are Byzantine at best. And there does need to be a general review of the process and how can we streamline it to get projects in and out quicker. I'm not saying throw all the rules away, but it's time for a fundamental review of how we take a project through the process. But again, immediately you want to start having those conversations, it hits the tax issue diverts the conversation, and we're not going to raise taxes, conversation over. We got to get beyond that.
Yeah. Well, and Paul, I would guess what Matt just said, your life would be a little bit easier if you could divert all, if you had the money and do the money on the local roads, on the Route 3s, on the 610s and 17 and all of that, and let the state and federal government figure out the interstate. It would be more money for some other projects.
Absolutely. I'll say that basically with the way the smart scale is currently designed, basically it's kind of like the regions, the MPOs, and planning district commissions have a significant role in just determining what the priorities are for just major statewide roads like I-95.
Matt, we've been having these discussions for years and years and years. I thought
well, Ted, the biggest problem is the discussion doesn't leave this room.
No,
other
exactly.
Than listeners,
yeah,
we can't. Again, I-95 is the poster child. Let's jump really quickly to something that is a lot of people's very big issue, and why aren't we doing more with transit? We have done lots with planning for transit. I serve both on the VRE board and PRTC board. At the last VRE board meeting, we talked about the funding issue, and understand, under the current funding dynamics, VRE hit the stone wall in 2032. PRTC has already cut services, bus services, and transit services, and is still looking at a major deficit. And now any cuts are going to be significant cuts. That's the reality. So we're talking about our transportation legislative agenda, and we're going to change it. And one of the points I made to my colleagues is says, once we get this ironed out, which we can all agree to, because everybody around that table represents different political thought, and we'll leave it at that, I said, why don't we take it and submit it to the gubernatorial candidates and say, comment on this.
Yeah.
Let's hear what your plan, your true plan is for transportation. And everybody just went, what? Because now everybody's thinking, well, I want to run for this office. I want to do this. We're asking for this funding from our state and this funding. And all of a sudden, everybody wants to step back. Ah. If you look at the current races, let's just stick with the gubernatorial race. Are they anybody talking about transportation in any significant way? No.
No.
We're hearing the standard, oh, public-private, that's the future. That's great. You know what? Public-private has a point here in this process. I'm not going to dispute that. It's not the sole saving grace. But here's the fundamental fact. All right, you're collecting my taxes. I take the money out of my left-hand pocket, and I hand it to you. We get a private firm to come in and build the road for us. I'm still reaching into that same pocket mm-hmm. to take out my money to pay them. So it's a cost either way. To sit there and somehow say it's different, that because it's not a tax, is disingenuous at best. Yet we've got one candidate that's his whole thing. And then we got the other candidate, as far as I'm aware, has really not made a big deal or a comment on transportation.
Not much.
Basically, not he's much. Talking about the President of the United States, and that's about it. So how do we get focus on the real issues the Commonwealth is facing? And it's just not happening.
Well, and it's like you both have said. As soon as you hit taxes, and Paul, when you hit it, when you get what you pay for,
right?
Especially if you do travel out of state, you see it. I was just in Pennsylvania on the weekend, and gas is something like $2.45 a gallon.
Pennsylvania has the highest gas tax nationwide, so don't buy gas in PA if you can avoid it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you do see that, but then again, you get to Northern Virginia, and it takes you 4 hours to get from Northern Virginia on Saturday to Fredericksburg. So you get what you pay for. We're talking transportation this morning. I want to talk about regional transportation authority. You mentioned that. We'll get into that, and also a couple of city issues before Matt gets out of here. City Councilman Matt Kelly here this morning. Paul Agnello from FAMPO. More coming up on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:30.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Got an opinion about today's show? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Now, here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Paul Agnello from FAMPO and City Councilman Matt Kelly here this morning as we talk transportation. In the last segment, Paul, you mentioned about a regional transportation authority. I know We talk about taxes being a political issue, and that's become a political issue too in this area.
Yes, it's something FAMPO has been discussing for the last few months and is going to continue to discuss this month. I'll say it goes back just to the funding issue we talked about. Just there isn't enough funding for transportation. We need to think of a better way to fund it. Talked about the federal funding basically not being good and there being basically no hope on the horizon for that. At the state level, the state raised basically funding back in 2013, which did help, but was inadequate. So really, basically, if there's going to be any kind of short-term solution to help that, it really has to come from the local level. But I'll acknowledge that it's not an easy decision to make. Right now, Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads, those are the only two regions of the state that basically have a regional transportation authority. If we had one, we would have a lot of benefit for the smart scale process. We could basically use the funding to leverage to get projects like the northbound Rappahannock River crossing and other kind of necessary priorities. I guess I'll go back to with transportation, with this to maybe not view it as a tax, but to view it more like you would a utility. I'll say basically with the federal gas tax, it hasn't increased since 1993. Back then, basically the cost for first class a stamp was 29 cents. Today, that's 49 cents. So you see the inflation, and you can ask the question, where would the post office be today if basically they were only allowed to charge 29 cents for a first class postage? Right now, today, they're in trouble at 49 cents. So we're not basically paying enough into the system, and something has to change, or we're really going to basically be in a world of hurt in the future. I'll say our region is growing very fast. The population is expected to nearly double in the next 25 years, from about 350,000 today to nearly 700,000 in the future. If you look at other kind of utilities like your gas bill, your water bill, your phone bill, if you were paying the same thing back in 1993 and you basically said, we're not going to pay any more than that, that's not really a reasonable approach to have. And but with transportation, I mean, that's basically the system we have. We're basically at the federal level. We're operating with the same funding we had 24 years ago, and it's just woefully inadequate.
And there's two other factors in that. Also, factor in the fact, good, that fuel efficiency has gotten so good. So you're not buying as much as you were then. So actually, the amount of revenues are directly affected and go down. And the other factor, two other factors that need to be part of this discussion is, one, just saying no, one, is not a solution, nor is it a vision. And it also, not doing anything has a cost. As the roads continue to get congested and we have other problems, safety issues, we're now affecting the quality of life, economic development, and tourism of the region, which means those revenues, which we all depend on, start going down. So to stand back and just say, no, we're not going to do anything because we don't want to raise taxes, has an impact, and it's going to have a financial impact. So instead of having a tax where the money has to go to transportation, we can't do what the state and feds do with it. It has to go to transportation. Mm-hmm. Instead of that, okay, I'm going to start raising your real estate tax, your B-poll taxes, your business taxes, and your personal property taxes to make up for the losses due to increased congestion. So that's got to be part of this conversation, because doing nothing and just going right to that tax issue again is not really addressing the issues at hand. There is a cost for not doing it or not putting the transportation authority in place. The other aspect for me is making it a referendum and letting each locality take care of it is fine with me. I'm willing to go with that. But if the public votes and says, no, we don't want to do this, I can say, fine, we made the effort, we mm-hmm. made the case. You want the roads to continue to get the way they are? That's a community decision. I will live with it. And that kind of saves me some time from constantly having to fight these battles at a bunch of different levels to try to find the funding and get additional funding here to the region. If the community's not willing to step up to the plate, and it's that point, we've reached that point, then fine. We stop the conversation and we move on.
Has that been talked about, of letting people vote? Because that would be a great way
to... We have one locality, again, who anytime you mention the T word, it's an automatic no.
Well,
the same county that is growing leaps and bounds through approval of thousands of new houses, no improvements. The same community, the same board that wants over $1 billion worth of transportation projects in their county alone. Yeah, that group says no. You know, Stafford has kind of, we're getting from them is, you know what, if you make it kind of a referendum type thing, we might sign off on this. So that's part of the conversation. And we do have, I think not this month, but next month, a representative from Northern Virginia, representing Northern Virginia's transportation authority, coming down and talking to us and how it's worked for them. So that'll be an interesting discussion also.
Now, and you do, you drive around in the past couple of weeks. I've been in areas of Spotsylvania, Stafford, and the city, and you do see there is a lot of building now going on.
Lots of building. And I understand that Fredericksburg is a small piece of this discussion. A lot of it has to do with the traffic going through us and around us. But I think what people need to understand is, and VDOT has started looking at it, you know, you take our beautiful little downtown, which we all love and adore, the projected backup just on William Street getting across the bridge in Stafford County over the next mm-hmm. few years is going to get worse and worse and worse. So we're now talking about a situation that is going to directly impact the city of Fredericksburg, and you know, we're supposedly, and I question that on occasions, trying to protect the integrity of our downtown and its character. But these things are going to impact it, and we need to pay a lot more attention to what's going on, and each locality needs to understand the impacts of its decisions on other localities.
Yeah. You know,
all the construction of 2 and 17 by Spotsylvania is going to have a major impact on Caroline County, because that's their main route down the road, but nobody's talking about that. What's going on to our east in Stafford County is going to have a big impact on the city. And, you know, that's kind of discussions we need to have. This really does need to be a regional approach.
And unfortunately, because I was going to, as Paul was really well laying out the facts and the arguments of why this should be considered, unfortunately, but when you mention the different localities, there's just not trust, it seems, that the localities, there's not as much trust as you'd like.
I don't know if it's an issue of trust. It's it's politics. And
yeah.
The biggest enemy to transportation planning needs to be, you need to plan out quite a few number of years. You've got to fund the project and have, you know, revenue streams, and it takes a while to get the project through. Unfortunately, we plan based on election cycles. And then the players keep changing. So it's so it's more of an issue of, you know, who's sitting in the chair for the next year and what's going on in the next election cycle, which is really messes up transportation planning. I've probably been on FAMPO longer than anybody that's on there now, a lot longer. And yet, after each election cycle, I'm having to listen to the same conversations and the same requests for information that we had talked about 8 or 9 years ago. But you got to, you know, try to bring everybody back up, yeah. And that's a problem.
For somebody like you, Paul, who's dealt with transportation your whole life, you must go home frustrated a lot of nights.
Well, I'll say it is definitely a challenging. I guess you could view it as job security with I-95 being what it is. But I'll say that we are making progress. It's a difficult road, though, just because of the fact that the funding is inadequate. We're only able to kind of, you know, nibble around the edges or just kind of incrementally improve things.
Well, this is to be continued, I guess, Matt.
No, it always is.
But you know, you can see where there has been some improvement. Boy,
there's been improvement, but there needs to be a fundamental discussion, yeah, on a lot of levels, and we can't get past the T word, and we can't seem to engender our elected officials in Washington and Richmond to really focus in on this issue and have a really good, realistic approach to how we're going to deal with this problem.
Well, and you've said at City Council, and you've said here, any politician who can discuss transportation and has an answer and can do it in 45 seconds, is that's not an answer.
Yeah, and, you know, we kept on being told by the press all the time, current company excluded
of course,
that, you know, you've got to explain it in 25 words or less. Anybody comes up with a solution in 25 words or less, it's not a solution.
Yeah,
that's the reality.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll take that. We'll continue this transportation conversation in future programs. A couple things with going on in the city and what we have left. Liberty Place first. There will be a vote. I guess the final vote on that will come next week. But
no, I don't know. I think what the council did, and that tells you something when I can't tell you what's happening next as a council member. Now, supposedly now we have to go and tighten up and actually negotiate an MOU with Liberty Place, and I'm assuming it will come back to council.
Oh, okay.
When that happens, I have absolutely no clue. Is this a good idea? Based on the information I have, no, it's not.
And your concerns were the financing, right?
Well, here's the aspect of it. One, there was no hurry to do this, at least on the city's part. Don't know about the developer. But I only asked three questions. Do you have the financing for the project? No. Is the $4 million for the next 20 years from the city critical to financing? Yes. So now we have crossed the line, and we are now financing and picking winners and losers in development projects. And three, do you have any tenants signed? No. I know he's looking at some, but nobody signed. And we've gone through this with this project before. So there's those three problems. Then right next door, we have another big project that's going to come before the city, the Freelance Star building lot. And it's going to be a mixed-use project, which will require city approval, which means we can sit down and say, well, if you want this, we want this. And Tuesday night, you know, all I really asked the council was, we don't have enough information to make this decision. We need to know what's going on in the FLS site and what we can negotiate for parking on the FLS site. We had tried to do another option on the Liberty Place site. Staff came back and said it was not possible, didn't explain why it wasn't possible, didn't give us any briefing on what was discussed or anything. Don't know how this deal was put together, don't know whether any counteroffers were made, zippo. The entire conversation for a 20-year commitment of $4 million between two meetings consumed less than an hour. That's how much involvement we had in this project. And yet, All I asked on Tuesday was, let's step back, let's get the answers to these questions so we can look at everything and then make an informed decision. We did not, I didn't get a second. So, you know what? We might be able to go find out on the other project that, you know what, we're not going to get where we need to go, and maybe this project and what we're doing here is a good idea. I don't know that. The council doesn't know that. Staff doesn't know that. Yet we went barreling on through on Tuesday night and made a uninformed decision, frankly.
Is it because of, I know council was there's the parking component of this, of getting to use some parking spaces.
When you don't know who the tenants are going to be in a project, how do you, and supposedly there's going to be a large retail component and in other discussions, three restaurants going in here, that kind of will impact how many parking spaces you got. Take into consideration also, before that lot was closed off, when it was the old Safeway, guess what? You had almost 100 spaces, and after hours, what was it? It was an open space for everybody to park into. Yeah. So a large portion of this parking is, we're just getting back what we had lost years ago. So the developer, instead of just saying, hey, you know what, this is great and wonderful, we're going to open up this parking lot for you guys to use, it's now, oh, by the way, invest $4 million in it, and I'll let you guys use the parking. I think this was really, again, potentially, I'm not going to say it was not a good decision, but I can't make that determination until I have all the facts. We didn't come close to getting all the facts. We didn't seem to want to know all the facts. Thus, two short meetings and just saying, yeah, sure, okay. Conversations didn't work on option A? Okay. Here's what they want to do now? Okay, we want to go home. Let's go. Boom. That was it.
When we come back, we're going to talk about a little bit about parking with you, and you're getting ready to go pretty soon to Nepal, aren't you?
In October, yes.
Yeah, so we'll touch on that, too, before we get out of here. City Councilman Matt Kelly here, Paul Agnello from FAMPO. More, we'll wrap this up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You can weigh in on today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
We've been mainly talking transportation this morning. City Councilman Matt Kelly, Paul Agnello from FAMPO here this morning. Before we get out of here, last council meeting, and I guess we're going to start seeing some signs. There are going to be some changes with parking around town. Are there things that we're going to notice?
Yes, you are. And
what do you think of all this?
We had this conversation the last time I was here with the vice mayor about the study, the Walker study on parking, and I think it had some significant flaws in it. In one, basically, that it was premised on how do we move people in and out of parking spaces as quickly as possible, and of course now starting to charge for parking spaces. You can go back and forth on that, but I thought it was an opportunity, and I pointed this out Tuesday night, of we have always talked about whether two-hour parking is appropriate for downtown. Is it enough time for a person to get out of their car and, you know, shop and go to a restaurant and everything else like that? And really, it's not. And it's been going back and forth for years and years and years. And one of the things the Walker study did not look at is who's coming into town, tourist versus shopper versus resident, and how much time do they need? You know, how many people are doing this? You know, we're about to, I understand, become the restaurant capital of Virginia. And so, you know, those factors didn't become part of this discussion. It's how quickly can it get them into the parking space? How quickly can we get them out of the parking space? So I know Main Street was in the process of talking to their membership about what would you like to see. And my last communications with their director was, has the study been done? Can we see it? And they said, well, we're still working on it, but we'll get it to you. So on Tuesday night, I said, hey, you know, why don't we step back a quick second and get this information, and then we can move forward. And, or, you know, I was ready to support it on the understanding that the conversation will continue, because this was only supposed to be step one. And I was immediately informed that the first thing staff was going to do was take up all the signs, put the new two-hour signs down with the new hours on it, and move forward with two-hour parking. Was advised that if we go and look at anything else, the whole study suddenly starts falling apart, because if we start changing hours at different locations, and we've had all the conversations we need to have, we're ready to move forward, we're done. And that point, I kind of went back and said, you know what? No, maybe I'm not going to support this, because I really don't want to accept the Walker study, because I think for what we really needed out of it, we didn't get. It was based on a premise of saying, you know, we have all this excess parking, but all the excess parking was in residential areas. A lot of the lots they were counting are now restricted. They were counting the Liberty Place Phase 1 or Project 1 in the mix, and a lot of other things that were frankly not happening. And you've also got, again, you've got to look at future growth and what we're going to be. And we still haven't had that conversation yet. So why are we all of a sudden, again, we did a study, and I think we're more interested in showing progress, and I put progress in quotes, than really sitting down and saying, where are we going to be at in 25 years? What do we want downtown? What are the parking requirements? Also, FAMPO has great information now. You know, your cell phone is being watched, so we can start looking at real-time traffic data, trip lengths, trip stays, and things of that nature. And that's an important factor to look at when you're planning for parking and usage. And one of the case studies that was done in that was downtown Fredericksburg. So we had a good idea of where the traffic's coming from, how long it's staying, and things of that nature. But none of that was taken into consideration when we move forward on this.
So a lot of areas that there's going to be two-hour parking signs, as I understand, in some areas that there aren't signs there right now.
Well, they're going to change them out. A lot of and I agree with this. A lot of the signage we have, one, is contradictory to other signage. We have a lot of special parking areas, and do we really need those? Because, frankly, we can't enforce it either. So we do need to standardize everything, and we do need to do that at some point. But the question first is, what kind of parking situation do we want downtown based on today, based on 25 years out, and how do we move in that direction? Again, we haven't had the long-term conversation yet. And I think we're getting into a situation again where we got to show progress. We got to show progress. So quickly, let's do something and show everybody we're doing something.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's effective in the long run, we'll wait and see.
Before we get out of here, we only have just about a minute and a half to go. You're going getting ready to go to Nepal. You're part of a group. There's a couple of different groups. You're in the hiking group.
I'm in the hiking group, and we will do basically four or five days of trekking in the mountains. No, I'm not placing a flag on Mount Everest.
It'll be
a little bit less than that, but a lot of steps the first day. I think like 3,200 steps going up the first day. I'm looking forward to the trip. Maybe I can find somebody in robes and sit there before him and find out the meaning of life and what the heck's going on in Fredericksburg.
Wow, and you could come back.
Tension relief. And
yes. You could come back a totally different person.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would like that.
So have you done anything? Have you gone and hiked Old Rag?
We're hiking. I try to get up early in the morning. Optimore, dare try. No, I've been pretty consistent about getting up early in the morning and doing at least a mile or two.
Okay.
Doing stairs and things of that nature every day.
Well, I'll see you before that. We'll talk a little bit more about this trip and the whole Nepal thing. Paul, it's great to meet you.
It's been great being here.
And we will get you in on a more regular basis just to talk transportation issues. You've only been a name that Matt has invoked different times in this room. So in talking about it, and it's boy, transportation around here is something. Thank you for what you and what FAMPO is doing in this
Thank
area.
Thank you.
Matt, good to see you.
Well, good to see you. We'll see you again maybe a month or so.
We'll see you in about a month. And we'll
see where the heck things are then.
We'll talk, I'm sure.
I don't know where they're going to be.
Parking and Liberty Place and transportation, it all just runs together. Thank you so much. City Councilman Matt Kelly, Paul Agnello from FAMPO. That's it. We'll see you tomorrow on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.